The U.S. Treasury says it has sanctioned roughly 60 entities, vessels, and people as part of a new global campaign to cut off Iran's revenue. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan. This show is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today's date is August 24th, 2026. Here's a quick note on why that 60 number matters. The campaign's reach is explicitly global, and that changes who gets forced to make uncomfortable choices. The Dutch public broadcaster AVROTROS will skip next year's Eurovision, saying the contest can no longer be considered neutral. Director General Taco Zimmerman told viewers, "The Netherlands is a five-time winner, and this withdrawal follows a string of other European broadcasters bowing out amid disputes over political tensions and rule changes at the European Broadcasting Union. Why watch? A cultural institution is now a diplomatic pressure point. Expect more broadcasters to weigh participation as a statement, not just entertainment." Britain has taken a concrete step toward boosting Ukraine's deep strike resilience. Prime Minister Andy Burnham personally handed over declassified technical details for the UK components of the Storm Shadow cruise missile and authorized MBDA to share those blueprints. The idea is to enable local assembly in Ukraine alongside French partners, turning a supply problem into a longer-term industrial capability. This is notable because it's not a new shipment of rockets today. It's a transfer of know-how that could make access to long-range strikes more sustainable. And that raises the political heat with Moscow.
A tragic reminder about extreme heat. A 68-year-old French tourist, identified by park officials as Pierre-Michel Formosa, died in Death Valley after a vehicle got stuck and he and a companion walked across salt flats in roughly 116 degrees Fahrenheit. Park teams found his body about 1.5 miles from the paved road. Officials note extreme heat warnings were in effect and stressed the usual advice: stay with a disabled vehicle, carry water, and have a way to call for help. Watch this because it's a human-scale example of how record heat turns ordinary mistakes into fatal outcomes. What changed this week is the scale and tone of U.S. economic pressure on Iran. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent announced Operation Economic Outcast. He used the phrase "economic D-Day" and pledged to sever every economic lifeline that sustains this tyrannical regime. Concretely, the U.S. is targeting five categories the Treasury singled out: digital assets, technology, gold, aviation, and shipping. The agency says about 60 targets across hubs such as the UAE, Hong Kong, China, Singapore, and Switzerland have already been sanctioned. That's a sweeping reach, and it's meant to do two things. First, to squeeze Tehran by choking key revenue channels. Second, to force intermediary states and banks into a stark choice: do business with Iran and risk U.S. secondary sanctions, or cut ties and lose a customer.
There are three immediate angles to understand. First, the operational problem. Secondary sanctions are extraterritorial by design. They don't just punish Iran-linked firms, they punish non-U.S. institutions that continue to facilitate those firms. That creates a compliance headache for neutral banks and shippers. One practical consequence is that banks in places like the Gulf or Hong Kong face a higher cost of doing business, not only in potential fines, but in the operational burden of tighter screening. Markets tend to price that risk through wider spreads and more expensive trade finance. Second, the geopolitical problem. China remains Iran's biggest oil customer, and Beijing has already signaled it will resist U.S. pressure where its strategic energy needs are concerned. So the U.S. risks forcing a choice between the dollar-centered financial system and continued trade with Tehran. Third, the market problem. Since the campaign comes amid months of tensions that have already disrupted traffic through the Strait of Hormuz and pushed energy prices up, the sanctions can increase volatility in oil markets and in shipping insurance, and they could encourage workarounds, more ship-to-ship transfers, opaque middlemen, and even increased use of alternative assets like gold or crypto to settle trade.
Reddit discussions captured that split reality. On one side, there's visible support for cutting Tehran's funding. On the other, many commenters warned the policy could backfire by destabilizing markets or forcing other powers to choose sides. That mirrors sober analysis from trade and sanctions experts. The measures are blunt and politically visible, but their success depends on how tightly the U.S. can enforce them and how much patience partners like China, India, or Turkey have for secondary coercion. Expect two things in the next few months: higher compliance costs for mid-tiered banks and shipping firms, and intensified diplomatic pushback from states who feel squeezed into making binary choices. So what should you watch next? Look for three signals. 1. Whether China or large Gulf states publicly or privately refuse to decouple from Iranian trade, that would signal limits on U.S. reach. 2. Whether neutral banks begin to preemptively exit Iran-related business, which would amplify the economic squeeze even without wider legal cases. And 3. Whether Iran and its partners accelerate black market or technological workarounds, including increased use of non-dollar settlement channels. If any of those move, the operation has entered a new phase, from symbolic pressure to strategic re-engineering of regional trade.
Now shift north and west. The U.S. has also turned trade leverage into a political weapon against Canada. Over the weekend, Washington imposed roughly 50% tariffs on about $20 billion of Canadian goods under an old Depression-era law, and President Donald Trump followed up on social media saying tariffs on cars, trucks, automotive parts, and steel would run at 50% starting January 1, 2027, unless production is shifted into the United States. Ottawa's response was immediate. Prime Minister Mark Carney called the approach an attempt to subordinate Canada and promised dollar-for-dollar retaliatory tariffs, with measures set to begin on September 8th. Economists already estimate this kind of escalation could shave roughly 0.3 to 0.5 percentage points off Canada's GDP growth if it persists. There are three practical mechanics worth noting. First, the U.S. invoked Section 338, a law not widely used for sweeping bilateral tariffs, which makes the move legally contentious and invites court challenges. Second, the tariff scope matters less for volume than for symbolism. The initial package covers about 5% of Canadian exports by value, but those goods are embedded in integrated supply chains, especially autos, steel, aluminium, and energy. A nominally small measure can therefore cause outsized disruption because parts cross the border multiple times during manufacturing. Third, this is political signaling. Analysts and some corporate voices in both countries argue that tariffs will boomerang. U.S. factories that rely on Canadian parts could see costs rise, and consumers may face higher prices. Even within the U.S., lobbyists and state manufacturing pockets are uneasy.
Online reaction has been colorful. In Canada, provincial leaders and political figures framed the dispute as a sovereignty test. At least one provincial leader even floated cutting electricity or critical mineral exports as leverage. Commenters on the economic threads argued the tariffs are a, quote, dumb trade war. That phrase showed up from multiple analysts, because the U.S. risks damaging its own industry. Eurasia Group's Ian Bremmer, for example, said there's still time to walk things back, and the White House's decision not to celebrate a public victory lap leaves a sliver of diplomatic space for a last-minute deal. But even if talks resume, the damage is not only economic. Trust between the allies is taking a hit, and that matters for defense, supply chain planning, and long-term investment decisions. Where does this end? Two scenarios look plausible. The first, tactical rollback. Pressure from U.S. industrial stakeholders, legal pushback, and the practical costs of disrupted supply chains push Washington to narrow or rescind the tariffs before they bite too hard. The second, strategic fracture. If the tariffs persist, Canada will accelerate diversification, deeper ties with Europe, more onshoring initiatives, and a political pivot that raises the long-term transactional cost of the bilateral relationship. Either way, businesses will respond first. Manufacturers will retool supply chains, insurers will reprice cross-border risk, and investors will adjust expectations about North American manufacturing resilience.
Putting the two deep stories side by side highlights a theme. Both moves force third parties into binary choices. With Iran, the U.S. is asking banks and trading hubs to choose financial allegiance. With Canada, the U.S. is asking companies to choose production location or face steep penalties. Those are different instruments, sanctions versus tariffs, but both test the limits of economic statecraft in a world of integrated supply chains and diversified trading partners. If partners consistently refuse to accept those binaries, the U.S. will either climb a much steeper enforcement hill or be pushed toward bargaining that yields compromises rather than unilateral wins. Which matters more? Short-term pressure that changes behavior or longer-term alliance shifts that redraw supply chains and influence? Alex Morgan, Debug the Hype.